Well, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Drew McReynolds. I cover Canadian telecom media for RBC Capital Markets, based out of Toronto. And we're very pleased to have the President and CEO of BE, Mirko Bibic, with us today. Good afternoon, Mirko.
Afternoon, Drew. How are you?
Very well. Very well. So appreciate you participating and being here with us this year. I think a lot going on. So why don't I dive into it? Starting off with a high level, kind of deeper question. You know, what I can bring out in terms of sessions are points of differentiation across the Canadian telecom. If I look at BCE, BCE has an astounding 75% of households covered on the wireline footprint here in Canada. I think if you go back a date, you're almost completely narrowing the gap on wireless and, you know, on the cusp of maybe becoming the number one player. And then looking at your media operation, by far the number one player. I mean, clearly lots of points of differentiation there. You've been in the job for about a year, obviously been with BC much longer than that. But look at that kind of scale, those kinds of assets and real presence here in Canada. Can you say, you know, some of the advantages that, you know, continue to grow with time that you know, where you guys can leverage some of that scale?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Drew. Yeah, you certainly, you know, we have several points of differentiation that we're going to, that we've been capitalizing on and we will continue to capitalize on. And, you know, I'd start from kind of the big picture approach to your question. And I outlined when I took the job in January, kind of our strategic roadmap. I won't go through all of it, but just to start answering your question, I'm going to emphasize a few key points of our strategic roadmap. So one is continuing to emphasize our leading networks. And then, you know, a second priority is to drive growth with the services and solutions that we offer to consumers and businesses, leveraging those networks. And that's where points of differentiation really start to shine. And a third that I'll highlight and then, you know, kind of continue with the question is, you know, the significant strides we've made, particularly in 2020, but over time, but particularly in 2020, on stepping up our game on the customer experience side. And that strategy is bearing fruit. So if we go back, you know, start there and then unpack that a little bit, and I'm going to go right to building leading networks. It's been our hallmark to have Canada's leading networks for at least a decade, and I certainly plan to continue that. So now, you know, you talk about 75. Well, talk about our national wireless footprint. So let's start there with our national wireless footprint. 75% of that wireless footprint overlaps with our wireline footprint. So that leads to tremendous advantages for us compared to our peers. First off, as we build fiber deeper and deeper into our network, we leverage that fiber build to benefit wireless. And you're already seeing the benefits there. So we have 90% of our cell sites that are fiberized. Huge advantage, especially as we lean into 5G, you know, especially next year and beyond. So that's one. Two, with 75% wireline coverage of the country, and you think of all the central offices that we have from Manitoba all the way to Newfoundland, and those become extremely valuable points of differentiation, strategic advantages for us, because that's where, as you move compute power to the edge of the network in a 5G world, you utilize those central offices as MEC data centers. So another key point of differentiation. A third one, and we've talked about this many, many times, our network sharing agreement with TELUS, which will allow us to expand our 5G footprint faster and on a cost-efficient basis from a capital intensity perspective. And then I'm sure, you know, we can explore this. I'm not going to go on and on, but we can unpack this together. As you think about the growth potential, revenue growth potential in a 5G world, you know, leveraging IoT and MEC, and particularly the B2B use cases, which are likely to be, you know, the early use cases for revenue growth, we also have a big advantage there. because of our distribution strength, you know, our relationships with the largest Canadian enterprises. So right there, I mean, you have tremendous advantages where we're using wireless and wireline, the power of both of those together, and then, you know, developing integrated household offerings, for example, using both networks. So just to highlight a few of them, but they really, really set us apart from our Canadian competitors.
Yeah, it's amazing when you look at the 5G integrals. I think a lot of people in my shoes begin to look at the overlaps of wireless and wireline, and, you know, I beg to find anybody out there with kind of positioning, by Canada. On the Bell Media side, and you know, you've been on the regulatory side, dealing with a lot of media issues over your career. How does Bell Media fit with, you know, this medium-term strategy as BCE and the industry morph into that 5G you just described?
Yeah, I think Bell Media is going to continue to be a strategic advantage for us as we look ahead, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years out for sure. And just like, you know, Bell Media, in particular wireline, you know, they've operated symbiotically for a number of years where we've used, by the way, just start with the fact that Bell Media has generated significant amount of free cash flow over the years to help us fund our fiber deployment program. That's going to continue to be the case. I mean, let's just park COVID for a second. That's going to continue to be the case. I still see a world, it's apparent to me, that content will continue to pull through internet, and the internet will continue to pull through content. And the way we're kind of attacking that segment is just, you know, it's from a customer segmentation point of view. You know, we have the products, the content, and the platforms that every customer segment is looking for. If you want the fully fledged IPTV package, where we're leaders in that. If you want kind of a scaled back, flexible, app-based kind of environment, we have Virgin TV and Alt TV. And if, yeah, as a customer, you just want, you know, the media company to deliver to you your content direct, we have that, right, with Crave, which continues to scale an impressive service. We just launched CTV AVOD, and we have a whole bunch of other digital platforms that we're going to continue to leverage. So they're going to continue to work symbiotically. One will continue to pull through the other. When you look through, you know, when you look ahead to 5G, and, you know, some of the techniques that the industry may deploy in order to encourage 5G customers to move up the rate plan ladder. Let's take a look at what's going on in the U.S., the way they've differentiated their lower-end unlimited plans from their higher-end unlimited plans. There's video differentiation, for example, so that fits right in. You know, some of the providers provide content as an additional inducement to move up the rate plan ladder. I mean, that has good elements and neutral elements, I suppose. But the one advantage we have is that if you're a wireless provider in Canada and you want to adopt that strategy and offer, for example, an SVOD service to encourage the customer to move up the rate plan ladder, you've got to pay. You know, you've got to pay the SVOD provider for that. We get to pay ourselves because, you know, we would use Crave, and you've already seen us kind of use Crave in that fashion. So, and ultimately, it's going to continue. Bell Media is going to continue to generate free cash flow, which goes back to the primary strategy. And, 2020 is a moment in time. I think Q2 was the low water mark. We've already seen media bounce back nicely in Q3. Year over year, it's still down, but it's bouncing back nicely. Q4 is good as well.
Before we drill a little bit more down further on fighting, one last and a big picture question for you, Mirko. When you first arrived, one of your priorities, certainly to continue along the cost efficiency path that had been set for decades. And speaking with Thane, it's interesting because I think a lot of investors look at the progress BDE has made in 10 years on the efficiency side, and, you know, here you are, and there's, you know, certainly some additional efficiency. So I'd love to kind of hear from you what you've observed over the last year what's different in terms of the initiatives you're putting into the equation.
Okay. So, Drew, you're cutting out a little bit. So I think you're asking me about kind of the cost efficiencies I see being able to generate and building off of, you know, the impressive track record we have. That's a question, right? Yeah, okay. Okay, great. So you're right, like you just take a look as an investor, if you take a look at our enterprise, our enterprise margins, enterprise-wide BCE margins on a consolidated basis, very impressive. And just compare us to any provider in North America, and we lead the pack. That's going to continue. I mean, it's ingrained in our culture. And, some categories that I see we're going to continue to exploit. I'll give you three, and they're very important. So fiber. Fiber is parking revenue, because we have tremendous revenue growth on the internet side where we have fiber, and you can see that quarter after quarter, and we saw it again in Q3. But on the cost side, as we deploy more and more fiber, there's just a cost benefit to us. The fiber network, especially as we move into a world of greater scale on self-install, tremendous cost goodness there. The network is more robust, so on the service assurance side, we're seeing cost savings, and that's going to continue. So more robust network means fewer calls into the call center, means fewer truck rolls. That's going to continue. On the 5G side, I mean, it's not fiber, but it is about network leadership. You know, the 5G network is going to be a more kind of cost efficient, a more efficient network in terms of utilization and the cost to operate. So that's one category. Second category is, you know, our digital transformation, particularly, but not exclusively, but particularly on direct sales. So direct sales, online sales, you know, our sales through our various apps, much lower cost channel. And that as that ramps up, as we digitally transform ourselves and operate in an omni-channel environment, there's a lot of cost goodness there. A third category, I said I was going to give you three, I'll give you four. A third category is just continuing to maintain the discipline we're known for on discretionary spending. And then, you know, in a COVID world, all the providers are doing this. This is the last one's not unique to Bell at all, but, you know, kind of staring down our real estate footprint, whether or not it's retail stores or office space. And, you know, that's something that takes a little bit more time to address, but it's top of mind.
That last one is a little bit of the bank playbook as well with branches, I suppose, in some respects. Let's jump into 5G, and obviously won't do the deep dive here, but I guess the big question certainly everyone that does ask is, you know, what kind of monetization opportunities really come from 5G and when? So I'd love your update on that road as you see it today.
Okay, so on monetization, here again, we're going to be, you know, starting from the highest level. I'm quite optimistic on the ability that we're going to have to generate revenue growth from 5G. I mean, it starts with the advantages I highlighted in response to your first question. And then when you get a little bit more specific, we just start with, you know, examining as an initial case study. Our base of customers who have already migrated to 5G since June. I mean, it's a small base, understandably, because we just launched in June in a number of cities. But as I mentioned on when we released our Q3 results, our 5G customers have 50% greater data usage, and we're generating 20% more monthly recurring revenue. So, you know, an initial slice of the use cases, but that's certainly bodes well. And what you're going to see just on the consumer side first on 5G monetization, as we continue to build out our 5G network, our early 5G network, and by the end of this year, we'll have 5G, early 5G available in, or building, we'll have it available, or we will be building 5G in over 100 communities. You know, so that's going to ramp up, and we're going to continue to ramp that up through 2021, and it's really going to hit prime time when we get the 3.5 gigahertz spectrum. But my point is, as the network expands, more customers are going to join us on 5G. If you want to be on a 5G plan, you have to buy an unlimited. If you want to have 5G service, you have to buy a 5G plan. So right there, we're putting people in, even if it's at the entry-level 5G plan at, you know, call it rack rate $75. But as customers continue to use, because of the differentiated service experience, they're going to move up that rate plan ladder. So that's just the beginning of monetization. Then you get into augmented reality, virtual reality, home automation, e-gaming, you know, on the consumer side. That has a lot of potential for revenue monetization purposes. And then on the enterprise side, which may actually be kind of, you know, the first area to really drive revenue growth, you're talking about smart cities, smart campuses, you know, remote mining and all these things, and monetizing mech use cases. So again, a lot of potential there. I see that really starting to hunt. It's starting now in a small way because our base is small. But, you know, as we get into the tail end of 2021, both those segments should be picking up speed, and particularly as we enter into 2022 when we have real 5G, 3.5 gigahertz spectrum, et cetera, and a bigger footprint.
So good trend here. Wireless, BCE, just like other national incumbents, unlimited plans, equipment plans, one of the bigger developers, I think, in the Canadian industry in wireless the last many years. Can you give us an update on that duration? You take a little bit of a different approach than some of your peers, ensuring that it's not a forced migration, but the customer drives that migration. How far along are you on it, and, you know, what kind of overage pressure should investors continue to expect as we head into 2021?
Right. So, I mean, we're gonna be consistent in managing. We'll consistently take the approach we have since unlimited plans were launched in mid-2019 as we work our way through, that decline. It's going to be very managed. We're going to manage that base very carefully. It's the financially prudent thing to do. And we're able to do that while remaining competitive. Like, clearly we have unlimited plans available, and those continue to scale, and we're not shying away from them. They're here to stay, in fact. That's where we want our 5G customers to be. But you can do that while managing your overage decline. So the pace of decline will continue to be what you've seen quarter after quarter since mid-2019. In fact, in Q3, I didn't disclose the exact number, but you know, it can be figured out. Q3, overage decline was better than in Q2. Now, Q2 had a particular impact because of the complete shutdown. But you could see that in Q3, we managed to get it back to what it typically was. And we're going to continue that. On the one hand, you know, it's going to continue to have kind of an impact. You call it a headwind, if you will, on ARPU. But that particular one, I'm quite comfortable with that being kind of an ARPU headwind, because I'm managing the cash flow on that as we should. As I look at the other elements of our service revenue mix, roaming, I mean, you didn't ask about roaming, that's clearly going to have an impact on our ARPU and service revenue generally, for obvious reasons, and that's going to continue into 2021. But we'll get through that as well. Like, we can debate the timing, but it's clear to me that, you know, that cloud will lift, and then we'll be back into growth phase on roaming.
Drill down a little bit here, Mirko, staying with wireless. A lot of investor attention really on the competitive environment in Q3, the promotional intensity, you know, lots of kind of finger pointing and it seems to be a little bit more calming here in October and November, but of course, you know, we still have the historically promotions periods here in Q4. What's your state of the union as you look across the lay of the land at this particular juncture on where promotional intensity is trending relative to what we saw in Q3?
Right. So, I mean, great question. I had some remarks on that specific topic when we released our Q3 results as well, and particularly from the point of view of kind of emphasizing that I believe in the benefits we can all generate in the industry from the movement to installment plans. But it's up to the industry to really capitalize on that. And we really ought to be able to capitalize on that in a way that's beneficial to the customer. Because it's clear to me that the move to installment plan is beneficial to the customer. Because you unpack the rate plan, you know, your service, you're the service component from the handset component, and now the customer has complete transparency. It's up to the customer to decide which handset do I want, which quality do I want, which features do I want, and what do I want to pay. And then you make your choice as a consumer with the added benefit as a consumer that at the end of 24 months, that component completely drops off. So, you know, if you have that kind of environment that benefits the customer and it can act as what customers paying for the handset, we finance it. There's no need to subsidize those handsets or to discount them to the same degree as before. So I made some comments, you know, a couple of weeks ago with all the effort we put into the model, like we got to take advantage of it. And I think in Q3 we saw some heavy promotions with a lot of finger pointing, as you mentioned, particularly as it compares to Q2, which, you know, was a dynamic all on its own. But the good news is, I think in, you know, the latter parts of October, beginning of November, I think you're right. We've seen that moderate a bit, which is very encouraging. And I suspect, though, that as we approach Black Friday, which is right, you know, right upon us, we'll see some intensity come back again. But that part doesn't trouble me, because I think the installment plan model or thesis always factored in my mind, certainly in our modeling, that you'd have these spikes in promotional intensity at the obvious periods of time of the year. So the fact that we might get a little bit more intense in Black Friday wouldn't concern me. It's what we do the rest of the time. But, you know, this slice of time, the last 2-3 weeks and, you know, period that we're in now is encouraging.
I often characterize 2020 and 2021, even putting COVID aside, as a little bridge period in the wireless industry, where the whole industry coming off a decade and a half of unloading and good increases in lifetime value per sub and consumer market. And then, you know, still looking out a couple of years, there's a 5G opportunity there, but it's going to take some time. And so we're kind of in this bridge period here. When you then factor COVID in, how optimistic are you when you look at the wireless market in 2021? You know, are you confident, you know, Q2 was the worst we'll see, hopefully, for many, many decades to come? Are we continuing to improve here as we get into 2021?
Well, I think fair to say, I got several perspectives on your question. I'm quite optimistic at our competitive position, Bell Mobility's competitive positioning in wireless, either during the bridge period, as you describe it, I'll say a few more words on that in a second, and longer term. So in the, you know, your words, the bridge period, clearly 2020, we can characterize as a bridge period, particularly given COVID. I don't know how long, you know, in 2021, we certainly will continue to be healing from the lows of 2020. Yeah, for sure. You know, roaming. Again, roaming's not coming back in Q1 of 2021, probably not in Q2. You know, I think it'll be better in the latter half, but we'll see. I can't predict any better than you can whether or not, you know, how severe this second wave is going to be and if there's a third wave in advance of the vaccine. I can't predict any of that. But what I can say is the following. From Bell Mobility's perspective, we're much better positioned now to kind of mitigate the impacts of second and third waves than we were in March and April. We just are. The way we operate, you know, the call centers, our digital capabilities, et cetera. So that's one aspect that gives me a lot of confidence. Another one is, you know, and I said this in our 2 weeks ago, we are focused entirely on high-quality smartphone loadings. We are de-emphasizing connected device sales, tablets in particular. I don't want to take connected devices too far because there's a world there of tremendous revenue growth in IoT down the road. But, you know, on low-value tablet sales, we're going to play in that when it's accretive, but we're de-emphasizing tablets. So to me, the fact that, like, right now we are focused on high-quality loadings is just going to support our service revenue. And, you know, we are grabbing share, meaningful share in the prepaid market, which you know, we've been doing that for, you know, since 2018, and that continues to scale, and it continues to scale even now. So that, you know, it's good for us in terms of supporting our positioning even during, you know, this bridge period. And then we're going to get through this, and 5G is going to, real 5G is going to hit with 3.5, and then we have all the growth potential that we've already discussed.
That's interesting. I'm going to, just with an eye to the time here, with about 5 minutes left, two kind of other topics I'm just with you, Mirko. First, on the wireline side, amazing to see the residential momentum that BC has. Clearly in this environment, the focal point in this market, perhaps provide an update on pressures you're seeing in that, and what ability you have today on the different business market segments going forward.
Okay, so on, you cut out on the first part of the question, so I'm not sure I completely captured the question, but on the second one, look, on the business market side, on the enterprise side, I'm quite pleased with the how we've managed 2020. We've had some puts and takes, but very stable. And I say puts and takes because, you know, we've had growth in connectivity and in voice and in video conferencing and audio conferencing as enterprises shifted to manage their connectivity needs through COVID, and that's stuck pretty much throughout the 2020. On the other hand, we've had some projects that were delayed, deferred on the managed services and professional services side. So, you know, on balance, it's been quite stable. The collections have been very strong, which is good. On the small business side, you know, just like as a CEO of a large iconic company, I'm just, you know, I am worried, not for Bell, but I am worried for the state of small businesses out there. This is a difficult period. Like, we're in a privileged position compared to what entrepreneurs and small businesses have to go through. So that causes me concern on, you know. That said, you know, now turning back to kind of our performance in that segment, it's been better than we feared at the beginning of the year. Collections have been rather stable. Bankruptcies have not been as acute as we thought. A lot of that has to do with government support, so we'll see what that brings in 2021. But it is a very small part of our revenue mix. And then on wireline outlook, generally, like, we're going to continue to exploit our fiber build, and with that comes, you know, very strong internet revenue growth, BCE wide, and earnings growth BCE wide. So I see wireline as continuing to be quite stable. And I think we're going to pick up from what we've seen in 2020.
Super. I'm going to squeeze two more very quick ones in here, Mirko, because I'd be criticized if I didn't. First, on the regulatory environment, again, at a high level, it really genuinely feels there's a good relationship right now that the industry has. Government and BC has stepped up, notably. Maybe a couple of comments there. And then lastly, you know, focus on BC's dividend, clearly sustainable, but your updated thoughts on growth in that dividend going forward. I know it's a board decision, but would like to get your current view on that.
Yeah, so I'll start there. From my perspective, I think it's really important for investors to hear. So as CEO, I am, you know, I really do believe in the dividend growth model, and it remains my number one capital markets priority. So, and I, you know, truly understand what our investor base is looking for from Bell, a sustainable stable dividend that keeps growing. And so I'm committed to that. And not giving forward-looking guidance on 2021, but I think you get the sense as to where it ranks in the priorities, which is number one. And two, on the regulatory environment, I agree with you, Drew. There are ebbs and flows in this all the time, but I think we're in a period of relative stability in the sense where there is a recognition and an appreciation both from facilities-based providers and the government as to the importance of continued investment in facilities, particularly during COVID. And, you could just take Bell as an example. Beginning of 2020, COVID hit. I said publicly, we are not going to cut back on strategic priority investment in strategic priorities to hit a payout ratio target, for example, because these investments are too important for us in the near, medium, and long term, but for the country as well. So we leaned in and accelerated deployment, particularly in rural areas. That's what the government's looking for as well. So they're operating in partnership with industry also, and they're accelerating their broadband subsidy program so that we can work in partnership, not just Bell, but the entire industry, to do more faster. And that's just one proof point of a shift in that relationship, which is an important one, because those are the kinds of – that's the kind of dynamic that encourages us to invest more.
Yeah. Well, Mirko, with that, I know time, we'll have to cut it off there. I really appreciate you being with us today. So on behalf of RB, thank you very much. Look forward to watching the print. And then as far as Canada's key investing, we love it. So, but good luck. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Drew. Appreciate it.